When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to a brand new series of Book Off, the literary podcast with a difference. I'm Joe Haddo, and I hope wherever you're listening from, you're staying safe and well. Yes, this is episode one of series 7. How did that happen? And it's great to have all our regular listeners back again. And hello to anyone who's new to this podcast. Just a reminder that all our previous episodes are available to listen to anytime you like. So if you're looking for more audio company and some other book recommendations, why not check those out? On today's episode, I'm joined by two fabulous writers who'll be telling us about their latest novels, their writing, and of course, pitching us a book they love and think that we should all read. My first guest has had many jobs before becoming an author, which included being a TV presenter and a professional dog walker, but not combined, I don't think. Her debut novel, The Chalk Man, garnered the attention of her writing idol, Stephen King, and many of us readers too. Here to tell us about her fourth novel, The Burning Girls, it's CJ Tudor. Hello!
Hello! Thank you for having me!
Lovely to have you. And such an abundance of energy there, Kaz. Amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I've finally had my second coffee. So, you know, catch me before the second coffee and it's a whole different story.
And my second guest lives in a large elk forest in rural Sweden, and we all wish we were there right now. But he still managed to find some Wi-Fi for this podcast, which is amazing. He's the author of the very popular Tuve Moodysson series and has just published his first standalone novel, The Last Thing to Burn. It's me old mucker, Will Dean. Hello.
Hello there, and thank you very much for having me.
Will, it is my pleasure. It's my pleasure to have you both on the podcast, and you two sort of know each other quite well, don't you? Because you've done quite a few events together.
We have, yeah. I mean, not so much in the last year as much, obviously, but yeah. I mean, we were fellow panelists, weren't we, Will, on the Harrogate New Blood panel many moons ago when our first books came out, which was awesome. So we've done a few things since. So yeah, it's cool.
That was quite a way to start, being on that panel together. That was
it was a way to start. It's all been downhill since then, really.
And I have to say, Will, we've had some snow in the UK recently, and I, along with most of the population, got very excited, posted pictures of it. Some people got out in it. And then I thought of you over there in rural Sweden, how pathetic our little snow patch would look compared to what you've got there, probably.
Are you like thigh deep in snow, Will?
No, but it is about minus 10 outside, so it's nice and chilly.
Oh, it was pretty, they reckon it was going to go to like minus 10 here at one point, but we didn't have any snow in Sussex. My little girl Betty is so disappointed. She's like, there's snow other places. She's like, why isn't it snowing?
My little boy Alfie, Kaz, you will enjoy this. He makes little tiny snowmen, like creepy little tiny snowmen who are kind of teddy bear sized, and he'll move them around. So he'll put them outside your window, outside your door, or outside the car. And you never know where one is going to be, and they are so unknown.
I remember you telling me that. I remember at the time thinking, there's a creepy book in that, you know.
I wonder if that's going to be the plot or part of the plot for Kaz's next novel there, Will.
It could be a collaboration. Now you've sort of...
yeah. But we're not talking about future novels. We're talking about your two new books, which have just come out. And Kaz, congratulations on The Burning Girls. You mentioned that you didn't get much snow where you are in Sussex. This book is set in Sussex, and I just wondered where the idea for it came from.
Well, I mean, when we've lived here now, we moved here about 2.5 years ago, and when we came to see what is now our home, we drove past this. It's a very rural area. It's a very tiny little village. And as we were driving into the village, there's this small white chapel sort of up on a small hill to the left as you drive in. And something about it caught my attention straight away, because it's sort of not very typical of English villages. It's like small and white and looks like it should be in sort of a dusty Midwestern US town or something. It's very American Gothic. And something about it just caught my attention right away, and I just thought, oh, that's creepy. And I knew I wanted to write about it. And then I started sort of doing a bit of research about the area. And I knew a little bit about it anyway, because my partner has family in the area. But there's a big tradition. I mean, 500 years ago, 17 Protestant martyrs were burnt at the stake in the Sussex area. Lewes is a town just up the road, by Queen Mary in her what was called the Purge of Protestants. And they're still commemorated every year. Lewes has these huge, huge bonfires and torchlit processions, and they carry 17 flaming torches for the 17 Protestants that were burnt at the stake in Lewes, in Bloody Mary's Purge of the Protestants. And something about that kind of, I thought, was a very interesting background. There's something very folk horror about it, very Wicker Man,
yeah, there
is one of my
favourite
films. And I sort of started thinking about the chapel and this sort of rather bloody, dark, macabre history the area had. And that was kind of really what sort of kicked off the idea for the Burning Girls.
Mm. Now, I come from East Sussex, and I remember...
Do you?
Yeah, and I go back very often and love Lewes. And I remember how big and how sort of important a date in the calendar the Lewes bonfire night was. And I was sort of thinking about like how much of that there is in Sussex, how much of that sort of weird pagan-y sort of stuff there is.
There really is. It's a big thing that nearly every small village has a bonfire society. And they all have processions on bonfire night, partly as a commemoration of, you know, the burning of the Sussex martyrs, considering it's sort of commemorating something which was about religious persecution. It's all very heathen, because people would like, they'll dress up in historical garb and so on. And I remember I went with my husband and my little girl to watch one of the processions in Lewes once with his sister who lived there at the time. And it's crazy. I mean, it's a health and safety nightmare.
Nightmare.
There's all these people walking the street, children holding flaming torches. It's just, it's kind of crazy. But I thought it was a wonderful backdrop, because in my book, instead of sort of the flaming torches, the villagers make these kind of twig dolls called Burning Girls, which they burn on pyres every year on the anniversary of the martyr's death. And I just thought it was a great backdrop for sort of creepy folk horror. And obviously there's another mystery entwined with the disappearance of two teenagers in the 1990s and the supposed suicide of the previous vicar when this new vicar and daughter come to the parish. But it's a lovely, rich background for a book and a great setting, I thought, for a creepy sort of horror novel.
Mm, yeah, it is. And Will, I mean, we've touched on the old Elk Forest a couple of times already, but is it sort of inevitable that you are inspired by what you see out of your window?
My new book, The Last Thing to Burn, is set in the East Midlands, where I'm from, in the Fens, on the edge of... I was brought up on the edge of the Fens, and I've always found that landscape incredibly eerie. That idea of the kind of borderland between the sea and all of that agricultural farmland, and those marshes and those dikes, those huge skies. And at night time, it gets very, very dark. And it's just a very unnerving place. So I like the idea of... Yeah, most of my book ideas start with landscape. And then... So this one started with seeing in my mind's eye at midnight one night, lying in bed, I saw a farm, a completely flat, featureless farm. And at the center of this huge farm, there's a tiny, tumble-down, two-up, two-down farm cottage. And I saw a woman walking around. And she never went very far. So that was the starting point. So often, my ideas start with landscape.
And this is your, as I mentioned, your first standalone novel. So it's not a Tuva book. How was it sort of not spending any time with her for this novel?
It was good. I mean, I wrote the first draft back in 2017, had the idea in 2016, before Dark Mind, Tuva 1 was even out. So it's been ticking along in the background as my secret project. And I've loved it because, You know, I get to kind of flex my writer muscles. You know, I love writing Tuva, and the familiarity and the comfort and the humor and the warmth of those books, along with the darkness. But then writing standalones, it's very liberating. It's very freeing. And I never really know what's going to happen at the end of the book. And I don't know if the main character is even going to survive the novel. For me, that's just very exciting. You know, I get a buzz writing the standalones.
It's like being in a, you know, successful band and then going off and doing your own solo album, isn't it?
I don't know about that. For me, it's more like, and I think it helps that I'm so far away from the real world and from publishing over here. I just write the stories that come into my head and hope for the best. It's not a very commercial way of writing, but I have a story and I don't really care if it gets published next year or in 10 years. It's just, I kind of just have to go with it. If a story speaks to me, I have to see, I have to tell myself that story to kind of get it out of my system.
Kaz, for you, is there an element of that sort of, oh, I woke up from a dream and I had that vision of something and that's going to be a story? Or is it more sort of historically researched and, you know, like once you've driven through that small village in Sussex, it's planted the seed and then you have to go and sort of explore it?
No, I mean, I'm very lazy on research, actually. I obviously, you know, generally do it because I have to. But no, I'm kind of like, well, you get an idea and you have to write it. I mean, for me, the starting point was the small church up the road. And all the other books have come from like odd sort of starting points, like The Chalk Man was inspired by a box of chalk someone gave my little daughter for her second birthday. And we drew stick figures on the driveway and that was the starting point for that. And The Taking of Andy Thorne was inspired by, you know, the mines where I used to live and walking the dog over the old abandoned mines. And The Other People was just literally the start of The Other People was pretty much what happened, where I was driving behind this kind of weird old car in a traffic jam and just started thinking about what would happen if like this face popped up in the rear window and it was someone being kidnapped. And so I think my ideas tend to come from odd events that happen to me or things I see. And then very much it'll spark something off. And it's quite often, I suspect Will gets this as well, you get this, what if this happened? What if this following thing happened? And then very much you sort of suddenly find you have to run and write that idea. But I found it really interesting what Will was saying about sort of that idea of sort of almost having a side project. It's a bit like sometimes, but I'm lucky that things I love to write are sort of the books that I publish, and I don't sort of try and follow a trend or write something. I don't think you can write something you think would be publishable, because I don't think it works like that. But the idea of sort of, I quite like writing short stories as well. Short stories for me sometimes can also be a way to kind of let off steam and again write something perhaps a bit weirder or a bit more sort of off the mark, that maybe, you know, you don't have to sort of think, you know, I sort of hope people will like reading this when it's published. You could just kind of really let loose. So I think there is sort of a degree of, you've got to exercise different parts of your sort of your writing muscle, if that makes sense.
I'm just very excited to hear, Kaz, that you're writing short stories. I would queue up for an anthology of your short stories. Yeah.
Oh, bless you, Will. Thank you. No, but it's that thing, I think. It's almost like sort of having something, just doing something different. I think it's always, you know, I love writing the books that I write. And I feel very fortunate that sort of people read them, because they are slightly genre. They are slightly horror. They're not sort of traditional psychological thrillers that, you know, some of those books that get published. But it's nice just you to do different things always, I think. It keeps it interesting and exciting. So, you know, I thought it's wonderful that Will had a standalone. I think it's important to do different things and keep it exciting and interesting.
Yeah, very much so. You've already sort of mentioned The Reverend, but just tell us a little more and give us a tease about this book, Kaz. Reverend Jack Brooks and his daughter Flo, and just tell us about this close-knit community they find themselves in.
Yes, well, I mean, Reverend Jack Brooks and daughter Flo, they move from a big city, they move from Nottingham under somewhat of a shadow. There's been a tragedy at the previous church, and so they find themselves relocated to this small Sussex village of Chapel Croft, which has this dark, macabre history of these Protestants being burnt at the stake. And then in more recent history, two teenage girls disappeared 30 years ago and have never been found. And 2 months ago, the vicar committed suicide, which is why Jack and Flo find themselves there. So there's it's quite a, you know, it's got a lot of dark history, this village. And they're sort of moving. They're hoping it's going to be a nice, peaceful, quiet, fresh start. But pretty soon Jack receives this old exorcism kit has been left in the church with a rather sinister biblical quote about revealing secrets that are hidden. And then daughter Flo starts seeing these apparitions of burning girls in the chapel, and they sort of find themselves drawn into this mystery of what happened all those years ago. And they find that sort of this mystery, the sort of the history of the burning martyrs and the mystery of these disappearing girls, is somehow entwined. And there's quite a few strange oddball characters in this village, some of whom aren't too pleased to sort of have this new vicar there, who seems to be sort of ruffling a few feathers and stirring up some history and secrets that they'd rather keep hidden.
Yeah, well, that always happens when a new vicar comes to town.
Absolutely. Those vicars, you know, you've got to watch those vicars.
Well, we got so used to the old ways. Do you know what I mean? We don't want any of this newfangled stuff coming in.
Absolutely.
And Will, you said you had this vision of, you know, a farm, a two up, two down, and a woman walking around. And at the beginning of the book, we're introduced to Jane, not her real name. Can you tell us a little bit about her and the situation that she's in your book?
Absolutely, yeah. So when I had that vision in my mind's eye, I knew she couldn't leave. She wanted to get away from this farm cottage, from this existence, but she couldn't for some reason. There were no physical boundaries. You know, there's no mountains or walls or fences in that part of the fens. It was just the distance from help and from safety that was stopping her getting out of that life. The book's been likened to Misery by Stephen King and Room by Emma Donoghue. And I think that's a good way to kind of frame it. It's just very tense. I was very tense writing it, actually. For the first time, I really had a knot in my stomach the whole time writing the first draft, which was weird. I don't normally have a knot in my stomach every single scene, but I did here because, like you said, the main character, Jane, which is not her real name, she's living on this farm. She's come into this life. At the beginning of the book, you understand very quickly that she's trying to get away. She's controlled in every aspect of her life. So this book only really has two main characters, the woman and the man, the farmer who's keeping her captive. And he's controlling everything. He's filming her. They set up cameras in every room in this little cottage. He dictates what they eat and how it's cooked. So he insists on the food being cooked the same way as his mother used to do it, his late mother, who's also called Jane, just to make it even more unsettling. When she arrived on the farm, she had 17 possessions. She's from Vietnam originally. She has 17 possessions. The beginning of the book, she has 4 left. Every time she does something that he does not like, he asks her to choose one of her remaining possessions. And then that night, he will burn it on their Rayburn stove where she cooks all of his meals. So he's controlling every aspect of her life. And she is surrounded by his land, his things, his farm. And like when she looks out of the window, because the fenland is so incredibly flat, she can see for miles and miles and miles. She can see 6 or 7 different villages and different church spires, which are supposed to be help and sanctuary, but she can never reach them. And everything she can see is his land and the crops that he has sown and harvested. So she's stuck in that situation. I just find that idea horrific, the fact that you can be controlled in every day of your life.
Yeah, it is. And I read both of your books in January when it was hardly light at all. And how do you think I felt?
We're just trying to break you down bit by bit, shred your nerves.
I know, you are, and it's working. But they're both brilliant reads, I have to say. And
Thank you. I
wish you the best of luck with them because, you know, they're well worth putting on your shelves, ladies and gents. And you can order them now. They are both available. Before we do the book off, which is where you're each going to tell us about a book that you absolutely love and you think that we should all read, I like to ask my guests what they've been reading recently and if there's anything that's sort of taken their fancy. It's also a question I hate because when anyone asks me, my mind goes blank and I can't think of anything. And even though I've just read The Burning Girls and The Last Thing to Burn, I couldn't mention them. They'd just be gone and evaporated. But I'm not asking myself, I'm asking you. So there. Is there anything you've been reading recently, Kaz, that you want to tell us about?
Oh, crumbs. So what I think the problem I often find is that I talk about what I've been reading and it's something that isn't out for a while because it tends to be a proof because I'm lucky enough.
Well, that's okay. That's okay.
So what have I read recently? I read recently a mix of things, actually. My reading's been a bit erratic and I've kind of getting back into it a bit more. So I read Laura Shepherd Robinson's second historical crime novel, Daughters of Night, which I absolutely loved. And I say, I always sort of sell it to people by saying, do you know what? I don't really read a lot of historical fiction, but I love Laura's books because they drag you in, they pull you into this world. And it's wonderfully realised, but it's also a cracking good mystery and crime novel as well. So I really enjoyed that again. I thought it was a great book. And I read a book called House by an author I was unfamiliar with called P.J. Vernon. It's a US author. I think it'll probably come out in America first. And the editor, when I was sent the proof, pitched it to me as Gone Girl with Gays and Grindr. it's absolutely brilliant. It's such a fast-paced read, and it's such a good description. It's wonderfully twisty and very fast-paced, and it's just a cracking book. And I think it's going to do really, really well when it comes out. She says it's one to watch. And I'm reading at the moment. I am reading C.L. Taylor's, and you know, I wanted to say The Retreat, but that's the other book, because she's so prolific. She's always got like two books coming out at once.
Yeah, I know. There's always another one, isn't there?
I know. Her Last Holiday, which I'm thoroughly enjoying, because Callie absolutely never disappoints. All her books are great. So yeah, that's what I'm reading at the moment.
Fantastic.
She's just so prolific and so consistently been writing. She's sort of one of my writing idols in the fact that she's just... constantly, you know, produces great books, and it's just so prolific. It's sickening, yeah. Almost.
I know. Ugh. Give it a rest, Callie. And Will, what about you? What have you been reading out there in the wilds?
Well, first of all, I've got a second Laura and Callie's writing. You know, they're such wonderful storytellers, yeah. And I've got both of their books on my TBR pile, and I'm very excited to start them. But the thing that I'm reading right now is... I think it's called, it's also a proof, so I'm not 100% sure of the title, but I think it's called I Know What I Saw by Imran Mahmoud.
Oh, I read that recently. It's brilliant. Sorry.
Isn't it good? It's fantastic. I'm like halfway, two-thirds through, and it's just wonderful. The way he writes immersive London is brilliant. Like, and I can't travel, obviously, right now. I'm stuck in Sweden, and I really miss London, so it's wonderful to travel around bits of London through his book. And I don't know, his first book was amazing. This book's amazing. He's such a gifted writer. I love it. Absolutely love it. Mm. And then the other thing...
Well, his first book was You Don't Know Me, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
It blew me away, that book, honestly.
It was such a different way to sort of tell a story. And I think with... So I Know What I Saw, isn't it? What I loved about it, because it's got such a different... The protagonist is someone who is homeless. And we gradually learn how they become sort of homeless and living on the streets. But it was just, again, very interesting to have a different type of protagonist, you know, rather than, I don't know, a wife or a sister or a daughter who saw something or, I don't know, you know, it was the husband or whatever. It was just really nice to have a completely different setting and a different protagonist. But it's, yeah, it was really...
Totally agree. And it feels very authentic, his protagonist. And I love those stories where... someone's living their life and then their whole life gets turned upside down from one particular event or thing. Like, you know, I think Bonfire of the Vanities was the first time I experienced that when I was in my teenage years. And it just blows your mind because it's so relatable. We all know that everything can be derailed at any moment. You're not in control, even though you think you are. The other thing I just finished reading is The Killing Kind by Jane Casey. Jane is famous for her Maeve Kerrigan series, which is superb. It's absolutely wonderful. But this is her first standalone. And it's also set in London. And for some reason, I'm getting a lot of comfort from books set in the UK right now because I haven't seen my family for so long. And this is brilliant. It kind of delves deep into legal London and that whole world of courts and barristers and so on. But it's about obsession and secrets, and it's just a brilliant book. I flew through that novel. And then the last book that I've just read over Christmas that I found a great amount of comfort in was Bill Bryson's The Body nonfiction. I'm such a fan of Bill Bryson. I've been reading his books since I was kind of a teenager as well. I think I had one of his early books on tape in a Walkman. I was a very early audiobook adoptee, and I love the way that guy writes. So they're my three.
Oh wow, what a great selection from both of you there. And yes, Jane Casey, just brilliant, isn't she? And that is coming out, that one you mentioned, the new standalone, in a couple of months, I think. Thank you for those.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But now it's time for the book off. So this is where each of you gets 3 minutes to tell us about a novel. Well, not just a novel, any book that you absolutely love and you think we should all read. It's 3 minutes uninterrupted if you want them. You don't have to use all your 3 minutes, but when the 3 minute mark is up, you will either be rung out by the school bell or honked by the bicycle horn. Yes, oh dear indeed, Kaz.
Oh no.
So you get to decide, Kaz, if you go first or second. What would you like to do?
Oh, crumbs. I don't mind. I'll shall I go first? Yeah.
Go first, get it over with.
Let's
go
get,
first,
it, get over it over with. Sorry, Will.
Which means, Will, you get to decide the weapon of choice here for your 3 minutes. Would you like the bell or the horn?
I'm going to go for the bell.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, Witty. Well, so nice.
You get the bicycle horn now then, Kaz. That's your one. Now, before I start the timer, just tell us the book that you're putting forward.
I am putting forward a book that I love and read loads and loads of times. It's a book called Spares by Michael Marshall Smith.
Ah, yes, from back in 96,
it's
I think.
It's quite old, actually, isn't it? Yeah, it's about 1996, yeah. I think, yes.
Okay, well, I'm putting 3 minutes on the clock, and you don't have to use them all, but if you do, at 3 minutes, I'm going to be honking you out. So it's over to you, Kaz, uninterrupted, to tell us about Spares by Michael Marshall Smith.
Okay. I love Michael Marshall Smith as an author because he loves to mix genres, and Spares is no exception, actually. It's set in a future, a near future, so it mixes kind of sci-fi, a sort of futuristic landscape, but it's also a kind of a noir detective novel in a way as well. It's a mystery. It features the protagonist, who is Jack Randall, who's kind of a burnt out, dropped out kind of ex-cop. We know something terrible has happened previously to him, which is where he's ended up where he is. And he's ended up as a caretaker of something called a spares farm, because in this kind of horrific near future, there are farms where people are basically grown as spares. They're clones, essentially, grown as spare parts for the rich, those who can afford it, those who kind of want to carry on living forever. And into this comes Jack, and his job is basically just to sort of keep these spares, which aren't taught to, you know, they're people, but they're not taught to walk or read or talk. They literally are kept as almost like spare parts, just to keep them okay and living in case the call comes for a bit of them to be chopped off or removed. It's kind of, it's one of those horrible visions for the future that's been realised in some other books as well. But it's just a fascinating take on it. But Jack kind of starts to resent what he's doing, and kind of he sees a chance of redemption. He starts to kind of like try and help the spares, basically culminating in them having to basically break out of the spares farm and go on the run with some of these spares, as they're called, to try and save their lives. And it sort of takes us then through sort of what happened in his past, and it becomes kind of a mystery as well. It's a wonderfully realised futuristic landscape with a lot of dark humour in this story as well. People live in these kind of like what were once floating multi-story malls that have somehow crashed to earth, and now each massive floor is like its own city, and you know, thousands of people live in these great big towering monoliths. And Jack sort of returns to one of these to kind of hide the spares. But it also, you become embroiled in his past story of what happened to his wife and daughter, who we find out were murdered, which was how he ended up where he did. And it's kind of such an interesting story. But it has so many elements, not just being on the run with the spares, finding out what happened to his wife and daughter. It also sort of introduces amazing, crazy ideas like this place called The Gap, which is sort of this gap between sort of the technological internet cyber world and the real world, where there's like a war being fought. It's so inventive. It has all these elements that it somehow makes work and brings together. And it's a book I've read time and time again, and I always get something interesting and different out of it. And that it's also funny. Michael Marshall Smith is such a great author. He writes wonderfully about emotion, but he's also got this wonderful streak of dark humour in all his books. So into all of this crazy landscape, you know, person on the run. Ah! I thought I'd struggle to fill 3 minutes and I just going on and on. There we go.
Not at all. There was no struggle there. Brilliant. Thank you so much,
Kaz. I think Kaz should win. I think Kaz should win. I'm told. I want to read it.
I just ramble.
Well, you can take a breather now and sit back while Will does all the work. I'm putting 3 minutes back on the clock. Before we start the timer, Will, what book are you putting forward?
I am going to pitch The Little Stranger by Sarah Waters.
Ooh, excellent. This is a book from, I think, 2009, but set, it's sort of 1940s ghost story, isn't it? All right. I'm going to put 3 minutes on the clock, Will. It's over to you to tell us about The Little Stranger.
Thank you. The Little Stranger is a beautifully told, utterly terrifying ghost story. This is a haunted house novel. And it's set in Hundreds Hall, which is one of these fantastic big tumble-down Georgian mansions. And the main character, the point of view character, is a country doctor. And as a kid, he saw this house. He was obsessed slash very interested in this huge house. His mum used to work there. And I remember as a kid, you know, when I was living in a two-bedroom ex-council bungalow in the Midlands, there were a lot of these big houses, kind of one in each village, these massive places which made sense to some families 100 years before, but they don't anymore in the 40s. So this is, as well as it being a ghost story and a haunted house story, it's also kind of a family saga. It's an awkward romance. It's a book about obsession and about internal conflicts. The house itself is incredibly creepy. It's one of those wonderful settings, a bit like The Hotel in The Shining by Stephen King, or the Shirley Jackson novels, you know, The Haunting of Hill House, and We Have Always Lived in the Castle. It is a character in itself. The rooms, the creaking floorboards, the wallpaper peeling away, the servants' bells ringing when there's nobody there in the room. It's utterly creepy. It's fantastic. And like all good ghost stories, it's not really about a ghost. Like, there is definitely a presence in the house. There's the woman of the house, her aged mother, the brother who's suffering from PTSD from the war, and the housemaid, but there is also this spirit, this entity that nobody can quite put their finger on what it is. And the point of view character, this doctor, he's a skeptic, which is perfect. It's absolutely brilliant, because as a reader, you're also skeptical in any ghost story at the beginning. And then the most weird, terrifying things start to happen. One thing I love about Sarah Waters' writing, I love everything about her writing, she's a genius, but one thing I love is the fact that these characters are described as average looking, ordinary looking, tired looking, which I think is wonderful, because most writers want to make their characters really immediately distinctive. And she has the confidence and the boldness to take her time with her storytelling and to make these characters very, very ordinary looking. It's very relatable. There's a slow, steady pace. And there are certain scenes. There's a scene with a shaving scene, which is terrifying. And there's a scene with a dog, which is utterly creepy. About 5 years ago, I went all the way across Sweden in my 22-year-old truck to sell it to buy a 15-year-old truck. And it was a 9-hour drive. And I listened to The Little Stranger on audiobook on my phone. And it was one of the most terrifying things. It was mostly dark. It was in the winter. And I managed to creep myself out completely the whole way through. It's an absolute masterpiece.
Oh. Well, you finished on It's an Absolute Masterpiece, which I think is a very strong end to the pitch. Oh, well done to both of you. Well done, Will. Have a breather now. Two fabulous pitches for our first book off of Series 7.
Very different.
Very much.
I want to know is there a prize that one of us wins? Is there a cash prize?
Yes, pride. Pride.
Okay.
You walk away with your dignity intact. Just...
What I loved about your pitch, Kaz, was that it's, you know, there's so much to talk about in this book. I don't know I haven't read it. And you're saying things like, you know, there's not only is the actual premise of the Spares and the farm already a great
Yeah,
it's, a great this is, setting this is, you know, for the
remember
book.
It was 1996 as well, so it was kind of it's looking forward in many ways to sort of forward, what we could be capable of, perhaps even now.
Yeah,
it's kind of a crazy book, but it all kind of works. He manages to make all these elements, this kind of like technological war happening, and this futuristic landscape, and this murder mystery, and that the spares themselves all work together. It's such a cracking book and so inventive, and that thing's what I admire about it so much.
Yeah, amazing to bring all those elements in and make it sort of darkly funny as well.
Yes,
I mean it sounds madly brilliant, and I desperately want to read it. So you've definitely done a good job of
Excellent.
Pitching it there. And Will, I've read The Little Stranger, so I do know this book, and I agree with you that Sarah Waters is a genius writer. What I suppose I hadn't necessarily thought about before your pitch is that, like you said, like all good ghost stories, it's not like the ghost is front and centre, actually. And I suppose that's right. It's a sort of eerie feeling throughout the whole text, isn't it?
Totally. And she does that so, so well. And in a sense, like the whole family is kind of a ghost because they belong in a different era. Like they don't fit anymore post-war. They don't fit in society. And I love the fact that they're having to sell off their land chunk by chunk, and the local housing estates are just getting closer and closer and closer to the house. It's almost as if like modernity is just getting closer and closer to this family. And as that happens, the whole family are falling apart. Like, and maybe that's because there's a spirit of a dead girl in the house, or maybe it's just that they just can't handle this speed of change.
Yeah. And actually, you referenced The Shining and The Haunting of Hill House. And, you know, I think it's quite hard to make a character of a place, of a building, and make it creepy. But she really does manage to do that, doesn't she?
She does, and I can tell, you know, I've seen some interviews with her, and she often says that she's just fascinated by old buildings, and I can really see that. Like, the doctor of the book is obsessed with his house. It's like an unhealthy obsession. And at some point in the story, it's almost like he's trying to get into the house. He's trying to make his mark or claim ownership in some small way of the house. And that leads to this really awkward relationship with Caroline in the book, where they kind of almost get together, but they don't. And I think that's beautifully done as well. It's very subtle and it's very, very awkward in a British way, you know?
I'm quite fascinated with old, creepy, abandoned houses and stuff. And I think Will's right. There is this quite often, you'll have quite like a modern housing estate. Or most of us, I think, can remember growing up somewhere. But there's always just one house that's kind of old and kind of neglected and kind of creepy. You know, wherever you sort of live, and there's something fascinating about that to me. There's, you know, what's going on behind sort of the blistered paintwork and everything. There is a fascination with old, I think, sort of abandoned or kind of creepy derelict buildings.
Totally. I think us writers are all very, very childish. You know, we're very curious, like we were as kids.
I think it is. Yeah.
We want to go in.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I loved hearing those two pictures, guys. Well done. And that's... Oh, tough one to call, really, because they're both fabulous. I've got to pick one, because that's the game.
Oh.
And do you know? Oh, I know. I don't want to make any enemies here. We've got to do an event together. I don't want to know. You know, I don't want one of you not to talk to me. It's really tough. I'm gonna pick the book that perhaps people may not know, and that is Spares by Michael Marshall Smith.
Congratulations.
Yay! Definitely more people should read it.
Now, I might be wrong about that. Maybe it's just because I don't know it. But I think possibly The Little Stranger is well known. But I can say, having read that one, that people should definitely check it out if they haven't. But Spares...
Yeah, well, do you know, I haven't read it, and I'm going to now because of Will's
book. Oh, well, there you go.
It's been on my list for a while, and now I'm totally convinced, so I'm going to read it. So there we go.
Basically, we've all sold the books to each other, so that's good. Yeah, there you go. The Last Thing to Burn by Will Dean is out now. It's published by Hodder. And The Burning Girls by CJ Tudor is also out now. It's published by Michael Joseph. Kaz, Will, it's been an absolute pleasure spending this time with you. Thank you so much for joining us on Book Off.
Thank you.
It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.